This is David Getoff, and this recording is on the topic of cholesterol, facts and fiction. Most of you are probably listening to this on my website, but since I know in today's technical age, certainly many people will be downloading this and putting it onto a flash drive or onto somebody's hard drive or possibly emailing it to somebody or even putting it onto a CD so that people can play it on their cars, I better give you some additional information. First of all, if you do want to go to my website and you are not currently on it, the easiest way to get there would be David Getoff, my name, G-E-T-O-F-F, davidgetoff.com, will redirect you immediately, or the actual web address is naturopath, sometimes produced naturopath, YOU.com. Let me introduce myself for those people that are not on my website and have no idea who I am. I am a board-certified traditional naturopath. I am a board-certified clinical nutritionist. I am a certified nutritional consultant. I have been helping people get well in private practice for about 2 decades. I'm a licensed naturopath in the state of North Carolina. I'm a licensed nutritionist in the state of New York. I have given testimony as an expert witness in the field of nutrition in a court case in California. I am a fellow of the American Association of Integrative Medicine, and I am board certified in integrative medicine by their AAIM Board of Integrative Medicine. I am a certified biofeedback therapist, although I don't really do very much of that anymore. I'm an elected member of both the International College of Integrative Medicine and the American College of Nutrition. I am a member of the New York Academy of Sciences, the National Center for Homeopathy, the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and actually many, many other organizations. I have given presentations throughout the United States. I have been flown in to give presentations for naturopathic colleges, for numerous scientific conferences in fields of both medicine, nutrition, and dental medicine. And mostly, I like helping people get well in my office. Although since I can't get to enough people that way, I have done many educational DVDs, which are all for sale on the website of the Price-Pottinger Nutrition Foundation at PP for Price-Pottinger, NF for nutritionfoundation.org. Again, today's lecture is on cholesterol. The issues really have to do with science, facts, fiction, lies, half-truths, and any other type of descriptive words you would like to use having to do with the facts that what the public and the medical profession learns, is told, and knows about cholesterol is for the most part not true. This is very sad. Science can, although it doesn't always, do a very good job of discovering facts through what's usually called the gold standard, which is double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover studies. However, even when those studies have been done, even when those studies have been done correctly, which is certainly not all the time, that doesn't necessarily mean that the people in power who we respect as those whose job it is to give us that information ever read the studies. And of course, I'm talking about physicians. Now, let me add here that I do not believe that most physicians are lying to their patients. I do not believe that in most instances the media is lying to the public, although in many cases of both this is occurring. But that's simply because of the definition of the word to lie. To lie involves saying something, or writing it, or electronic transfer of information, but conveying information, which the person who is conveying the information knows is not true. If you know it's not true, and you convey the information anyway, you would be said to be lying. However, as is normally the case with cholesterol and many other areas, and medicine, in the vast majority of cases, from what I can see, the physicians are positive that they are giving giving correct information that is scientifically based to their patients. And in fact, in the area of cholesterol, they are completely wrong. So in other words, just to be clear, they are not lying. They think what they're saying is right. They are simply totally misinformed. The proper technical word for that is ignorance. Ignorance is something which very, very often ends up being a way in which information is conveyed, and if it's from an expert, which everybody believes, and yet it's wrong. So again, they weren't lying. They're simply totally ignorant. And of course, that is maybe even more damaging than lying. So let's take a quick look at this. First of all, what is cholesterol? How many things do we know about cholesterol? And this, of course, is based on research, scientific study, scientists, etc. We know that cholesterol is an antioxidant. We know that cholesterol seems to have some anti-inflammatory capabilities. It is a repair substance. And it has a number of uses that we know absolutely definitely. For example, if you would look at something called the hormone tree, in other words, it looks sort of like a tree starting high and coming down. Down toward the bottom, you might have the standard sex hormones, such as testosterone, progesterone, DHEA, pregnenolone, what do we have? Estrone, estrol, estradiol. And then above those, we have cholesterol. As a matter of fact, in order, cholesterol is first, pregnenolone is second, DHEA is third, and all the other hormones are made from the DHEA. So all I'm trying to say here is that if you don't have the amount of cholesterol the body feels is required, then their body may not be able to manufacture all of the different sex hormones we need, which is one of the reasons that a low-fat or low-cholesterol diet, or even somebody having less cholesterol than the body wants it to have, can and often does end up leading to all sorts of different emotional problems because their hormones are off. Another thing we know it does is it protects the body. It's an antioxidant and it protects the body. So to make things easier to understand, the more toxic substances or poisons of any kind that slowly accumulate in our body tissues, the more cholesterol the body will require in order to help protect some of those tissues. Well, let's take a look at that further. If you take any age person and watch their cholesterol over a period of 25 or 30 years, if they were to live out in the middle of nowhere in the rainforest or, I don't know, some country that is has no industry, and they're living completely away from any kind of pollution. I know that's much, much more difficult to find these days. Then the chances are their cholesterol would stay at a level fairly level throughout their life because the body wouldn't need more cholesterol. They have actually studied, I believe, some traditional populations and found that their total cholesterol numbers were in the low hundreds. That doesn't surprise me because there isn't a growing amount of toxicity in their body from all sorts of poisons that are coming in every day, from our pollution, from the drugs we use, from the insecticides, pesticides, and herbicides that are all over our air supply because we're an agricultural nation, from the cleaners, cleansers, and solvents that we use in our homes, from a new home somebody moves into which has all sorts of poisons in it until they slowly get out of all the different woods and carpeting, from the formaldehyde that, in fact, does come out of carpeting and ceiling tiles, and from different types of press board that are manufactured with urea formaldehyde glue. I could go on and on and on. From all of the stain retardants that are put into your carpeting, and from now all of the fire retardant chemicals that are added to bedding, mattresses, even an infant's mattress is now generally soaked or sprayed with a flame retardant chemical. And I guess that's so that if the infant happens to be smoking in bed, the mattress won't catch fire. That is meant to be funny because I think we don't need to be doing that on infant mattresses. The infant is laying directly on the mattress and is breathing in toxic chemicals, which can cause neurological diseases and possibly raise their cancer rate. But if you are in a civilization or an area that doesn't have any chemicals of any kind, much, much more difficult to find. I could certainly understand that it would be possible that throughout old age, the cholesterol level might remain low. However, that's not where we are. We are in an industrialized country with huge amounts of pollution. And since most people don't do any kind of supportive cleansing, which would be another tape, actually, that's all on my detoxification video. Therefore, the amount continues to go up and up and up and up. And just like a fire, which was getting worse and worse and worse and worse, the possibly the most detrimental thing that you could do if a large area was burning, could be a gigantic brush fire, could be a gigantic building fire, the worst thing you could do is put up a roadblock and stop the firemen from coming, or turn them around a couple blocks away and say, no, you can't come anymore. We don't want any more firemen. Just going to let the fire burn. That is very similar to the purpose of a cholesterol-lowering drug of any kind, or even possibly a cholesterol-lowering nutrient, like niacin or polycosanol, or red yeast rice. Either way, what we're doing for the most part is we're saying, no, don't make so much cholesterol. We're going to give you something that stops you from making cholesterol, whether it be lovastatin, simvastatin, Zocor, Crestor, any of the statin drugs, or most of the nutrients. Might be different for some of the nutrients, but in general, if you're giving the body something and its purpose is to lower the cholesterol or to prevent the liver from making cholesterol, that's very, very similar to preventing the fireman from coming to the fire. The fire is getting worse. We are getting more toxins in our body as we get older and older. And the cholesterol is coming up. The liver is manufacturing more because it wants to have the cholesterol available. And we're saying, no, we are not going to let you manufacture more cholesterol. We're going to stop it, even though our need continues to increase. And that's the reason that if you take a look at the research studies on cholesterol, you will generally find that the vast majority of them, and there are quite a few, will not show that lowering the cholesterol reduces the only thing that really is important, which is called all-cause mortality. And be advised that any research that does not look at all-cause mortality in the relation to a drug should probably be thrown out and never published. Because if you take a drug for a specific thing, whether it be heart disease or diabetes or cancer, and it were to greatly increase your risk of dying, because of all sorts of different side effects. However, if you didn't look at all those different risks, if you only looked at specifically what it was supposed to do, such as, let's say, lower your cholesterol, and if the drug, in fact, increased your risk of dying by 25%, but succeeded in lowering your cholesterol, then they could say, this is a successful drug. This drug is to lower cholesterol, and it did lower cholesterol. However, when research is done correctly, and honestly, and ethically, you must look at all-cause mortality. So throw out every single different cholesterol-lowering drug study that's ever been done if it doesn't look at all-cause mortality. And many of them do, so we will leave those in. Because if it looks at all-cause mortality, then you can decide, does the drug reduce your risk of dying? Or does it simply lower your cholesterol and hurt you in so many other different ways that taking this drug makes you more likely to die, which is not exactly what you want, and I don't think it's what your doctor wants. So if we take a look at that, what do we find? Well, we find that the research clearly shows a few different things. And when I say clearly, I don't mean that there aren't any studies that show something else. Research is not perfect. So if we had, for example, 30 research studies, and 25 of them showed one thing, and 5 of them appeared to show the opposite, normally you would instantly say, forget about those 5, let's look at the 25. And I would agree with that. We always want to look at predominant research. The largest amount of research shows something. If the smallest amount shows something else, first I would forget about that and say it's probably unlikely that that's correct because the massive amount shows something else. Then we would have to look at that small amount, because it is possible that the small amount of research was done perfectly and that somebody, like the drug companies, were funding the other research and purposely made it look wrong. But generally, we want predominant research. So what do we know, again, about cholesterol? We know, for example, on the studies that have separated it by age, that those people who are 65 and over, the higher their cholesterol, the healthier they will be throughout the rest of their life and the longer they will live. That has been shown in a number of studies. Now, that makes a lot of sense because as we get older, more poisons are accumulating in our body from all of the various different toxic substances in our homes, businesses, and environments, and the body needs more protection from the cholesterol. And so if the body can make the more protection and gets it, we are better protected, we have more firemen. Therefore, if it were up to me, I sometimes joke about this in my classes, if I was a benevolent dictator, then every doctor who prescribed a cholesterol-lowering drug for a man or woman 65 or over would lose their license because, based on the research, they're shortening their life. Now, let's remember that we believe that medical doctors receive all of their information from published drug research studies. This has been proven in research studies, not to be true. As a matter of fact, in one study, they took a look at a number of doctors, asking them about certain drugs and saying, do you prescribe these drugs? And I don't believe it was cholesterol-lowering drugs. And the doctors went over which of the drugs they prescribed. And the study people actually picked drugs which have been very well researched and shown to really pretty much not work, but they're still out there. And the doctors all prescribed them and asked why they prescribed them. They said, because the research shows they work. Then the people in the study showed them that the research that has been published shows that they don't work, and that only the full-page advertisements by the manufacturers showed they work. The doctors were amazed, but they did admit, well, I guess I was wrong. I guess I was using advertisements or possibly the information by the representatives from the drug companies that come into their office, none of whom are doctors. These are just people that are hired to push the drugs. They're certainly not doctors. They're not research scientists. I mean, it's the worst person to tell somebody, go put your patients on these drugs. And that's where they were getting a lot of their information, not from the research studies. And this continues today. A large percentage of the reason that people will take a drug is because the doctor, of course, tells them to. And by the way, your doctor doesn't put you on a drug. That is a misuse of the English language. Unless you are incarcerated, which means you're in prison, the doctor is really suggesting a drug to you and giving you a prescription which allows you to purchase the drug. He's not putting you on it because you will not get a ticket or a fine or go to jail if you decide that you know more than he does or she does and decide not to go on it. That's totally up to you. You are not being put on the drug. That is the incorrect wording or vernacular that Americans have chosen to use. Why are you on this drug? Well, my doctor put me on it. That's what we say, but that is wrong. In actuality, you need to think about that correctly. My doctor is actually writing me a prescription because it is their recommendation that I take the drug. I just want you to know that because I hate it when my patients tell me I'm on these four drugs because my doctor put me on them. I don't like that way of looking at medicine. So if somebody's 65 or over, the research clearly shows that the higher the cholesterol they have, and that's both LDL and total, the healthier they will be and the longer they will live. How about some of the other research? The research does not show a benefit to women with heart disease lowering their cholesterol with drugs. There's a lot of research on this, and over and over and over again, the vast majority of all the research shows that if you lower the cholesterol of a woman with some type of cholesterol-lowering drug, it does not in any way reduce their heart disease risks. Now, it may increase their risk of a whole bunch of other things because of the side effects, and therefore all-cause mortality goes in the wrong direction, but it does not reduce their risks. So what does the research actually show is the group of people for whom cholesterol-lowering drugs has any benefit at all, and why is that benefit there? Well, the only group that it appears that lowering cholesterol has any studied research benefit is in younger men who have already had a diagnosed cardiovascular disease problem. Now be careful. I'm not saying that somebody said you had high cholesterol. That is not cardiovascular disease. Cardiovascular disease means you've actually had, you know, a blood blockage, an arterial blockage, a stroke. You've had a heart attack. I mean, something has happened. You've had what's called an event. And because of that event, they've said, they take a look, oh, you have heart disease. For those people, there is a small benefit in lowering cholesterol in a small number of those people. A small number of them, a small percentage of them, a small benefit. And the research scientists have now proven that that benefit is not due to the lowering of the cholesterol. Well, wait a minute, hold it. Didn't you just say it was because their cholesterol was lowered? I said no, because they took a cholesterol-lowering drug. What they found is that some of the cholesterol-lowering drugs have a small amount of an ability to act as an anti-inflammatory substance, and heart disease is an inflammatory condition in possibly everybody. So something that is anti-inflammatory, such as certain cholesterol-lowering drugs and NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, including things like aspirin, are anti-inflammatory. However, when the scientists who know that the cholesterol number itself has no relationship whatsoever to heart disease looked at that and they said, well, wait a minute, it can't be the cholesterol-lowering effect. What else is it? That's how they found that it was because of the anti-inflammatory effect. So let's take a look at that. If something which reduces inflammation in the body can, even to a small degree, and it is a small degree, help reduce heart disease and your risk of dying of heart disease, but it is not in any way related to an ability to lower cholesterol, well, then the question asks itself, what other anti-inflammatory agents that might be natural, healthy, and very good for us, and maybe even do some other good things, might possibly exist which would do a much better job than the cholesterol-lowering drugs, and at the same time help other things in our health and not have any side effects or any detriments? Is there such a substance? And it turns out that there is. And that substance is called omega-3 fatty acids. And the omega-3s I'm talking about are not the ones from the plant world, because those are the wrong omega-3s. The ones I'm talking about are the ones from what I call the animal world, and of course I am associating fish as animals. So the two substances are EPA, which stands for eicosapentaenoic acid, and DHA, which stands for docosahexaenoic acid. And those are the two omega-3 fats, which exist in a fairly good quantity in fish oils, and specifically as well in cod liver oil. I happen to like cod liver oil better because everybody is deficient in the vitamin A and vitamin D, and it is the cod liver oil that's been used for thousands of years traditionally. The fish oil is much newer than that, because we didn't always know that you could press fish and get oil, but the livers of cods were used for a long, long time. So my preference is cod liver oil. My favorite brand happens to be Carlson's lemon flavored, and I have thousands of patients and possibly tens of thousands of my students and radio listeners that are on a tablespoon of cod liver oil from Carlson every day. Let me say real quick here, in order to protect the fish oils so that they do not themselves oxidize and so that they can do their job as they go around your body, people must have a sufficient amount of the vitamin E complex. And although there are many products on the market, the only vitamin E complex product that I truly like, have looked into thoroughly, and use myself every day, is a product with a very simple name. It's simply called Unique E. They only have one size. There are 400 units of the traditional E, and then a whole bunch of the extra other types of E in there, which includes so you end up with all four, alpha, beta, delta, and gamma tocopherol. Tocotrienols are not in that substance because tocotrienols have been found that they should not be taken at the same time and they should be taken at a different meal, so they shouldn't be in the same capsule. So I generally recommend people to take one 400-unit capsule of Unique E for about every 60 to 80 pounds that they weigh. So if somebody weighs 160 pounds, they should take two of those capsules together at the same meal. And that will protect all the fats that are circulating throughout your body, as well as, of course, the good fats specifically, such as the fish oil or cod liver oil. And again, my recommendation for most people on that is a tablespoon for an average adult of cod liver oil. And that breaks down to approximately a teaspoon. There are three teaspoons in a tablespoon. A teaspoon for, let's say, every 50 to 60 or 50 to 75. This is not exact pounds that they weigh. So if you have a 60-year-old child, you can give them a teaspoon. So again, the research shows that only men in a very specific age group get any benefit from taking any of these cholesterol-lowering drugs, such as the statin drugs. All the others, it doesn't reduce all-cause mortality. And in those, it is the anti-inflammatory effect that is doing this. So we're better off taking fish oil instead, which has much more anti-inflammatory effect. And there's a lot of research on fish oil and heart disease, and which does not have any of the side effects, nor does it reduce, nor does it increase all-cause mortality. Actually, it reduces it, because fish oil is good for numerous different things. And it also helps the blood flow correctly. It helps nutrients get in and out of the cell because it increases the permeability of all of your cell walls. So fish oil is a phenomenal substance. So let's do a real quick recap here. Women have not really been shown to get any benefit from lowering their cholesterol. So if a woman gets put on a cholesterol-lowering drug, again, if I was a benevolent dictator, the doctor would lose their license. Anybody 65 and over, the research fairly clearly shows that the higher their cholesterol, the longer they live and the healthier they'll be. So those people should never be on a cholesterol-lowering drug, unless, of course, you're trying to shorten the person's life. I guess if you were trying to do that, hopefully you don't have a doctor at the beginning of your name. And the small group of men who it has been shown do get a little bit of a benefit, and this is only the group, and I don't remember the exact ages. I'd have to pull one of my studies out. I think it's between, let's say, 30 and 50 or 30 and 60. If they have already had a cardiac event, that small group gets a little benefit, not very much, but a greater benefit if they instead take fish oil, and then they don't have all of the problems from the cholesterol-lowering drug. Now, recently, there was a study that was done in which they did what's called a meta-analysis, and they took a look at all the various studies all together to see whether or not, overall, there was a reduction in all-cause mortality with the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs. This is overall looking at everything. And it clearly showed that there is not. So what's the purpose of a cholesterol-lowering drug? Well, its greatest purpose is to make money for the manufacturer of that cholesterol-lowering drug. It does that very well. It's a very large selling drug. The doctors are being educated by the advertisements and by the drug company instead of the research. If they were being advertised, if they were being educated, rather, by the research, they would barely ever be prescribing cholesterol-lowering drugs. The amount of cholesterol-lowering drugs being advertised keeps on going up and up and up and up, and that's all being pushed, again, by manufacturers and sales reps, not by research, because more and more research shows problems. There is now a pretty decent amount of research showing that if you want to reduce your memory as you get older, one of the best ways to do that is to take a cholesterol-lowering drug. Because cholesterol is a very large proportion of the fatty acids in the brain, and it is needed for memory function. So if you would like to have less memory function as you get older, you can do that by simply lowering your cholesterol below where it should be. I don't really think anybody would want to do that, but of course, that's who knows what crazy things people might want to do. But I would never want my memory to be reduced, and therefore I would never want my cholesterol to be reduced. Now, let's take a look at this from a different point of view. Since I have now educated you that the reason your cholesterol is going up is most likely because of a higher toxic load on your body, wouldn't we want to have a less toxic load on our body? Yes, we would. However, adding a cholesterol-lowering drug increases your load further because it itself is toxic, and cholesterol-lowering drugs are very, very well known to be so toxic to the body that they can destroy your liver and cause death or liver transplants. That's why people that are on cholesterol-lowering drugs are continually getting their liver enzymes tested to see what's going on. And the liver enzymes are a very inaccurate way of looking at the liver because the liver experts, the people that are experts in hepatic function or liver function, often know, and if they don't know, they should, that the liver can be operating well over 50% below perfect, maybe as much as below 70% below perfect, and the liver enzymes still haven't elevated to let the doctor know that this is even happening. So all of a sudden, the liver goes south really, really fast, and somebody dies or needs a liver transplant, and they didn't even realize that they were on the road to that. So we really have a problem there. But there are things that can be done if you don't want to lose your memory. And by the way, there's something called transient global amnesia, which is also caused by statin drugs. And the best book on that is Statin Damage Crisis by Dr. Dwayne Graveline, who's a retired flight surgeon from NASA. There's also a couple of books on cholesterol. One is called The Cholesterol Myths by Uwe Raffenskopf, MD, PhD. Cholesterol Conspiracy by Green. There are quite a number of different ones out there. Sherry Rogers, MD, wrote a book on cholesterol. There are quite a few, and a couple of good websites just to put in here real quick. There's a website of a number of experts, and I'm talking about mostly MDs and PhDs, who have looked at all the research and have come to the most accurate conclusion that cholesterol is not a bad guy and that everything we're being told about it is wrong. And they joined together in a large group, and their website is Thinks, T-H-I-N-C-S.org, It happens to stand for the International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics. But of course, it's not just being skeptical that cholesterol is a bad guy. It's not a bad guy. It's a good guy. So it's an interesting name, but it is a very good website. Another good website is Dr. Graveline's website, and that's SpaceDoc, S-P-A-C-E-D-O-C, SpaceDoc, I believe it's .com for Dwayne Graveline. A lot of very, very good information on these different websites. But back to if you did want to lower your cholesterol in a healthy way, because I have now taught you that it's higher because of more toxic load on the body, what would we want to do? Well, we would want the liver to work better and the kidneys to work better because they both have to do with getting toxins out of your body. And I don't have time on this tape to go over it. There are various people out there, I'm sure, that have written books or done videos or talks on kidney and liver support. Personally, of course, I am biased. I believe the best one is my DVD on detoxification because it goes over this in detail of how you do this. But one thing, of course, is doing really good quality liver and kidney support products for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. A second is pulling out the actual toxins because liver and kidney support only helps those organs do their job. And there are a number of different substances that can be used that help slowly remove toxins from the body. They include activated charcoal, zeolites, a whole bunch of others. And I speak about them on my video if you want, you know, more information. Another thing that's important is diet. And it turns out that the worst diet for your health is a low-fat diet. This has now been investigated over and over again. There are some very, very good books out on this topic. Good fats, bad fats is one. A really good one is Gary Taubes, T-A-U-B-E-S, Good Calories, Bad Calories. Another one is, let's see, Malignant Medical Myths, by Joel Kaufman, PhD. And then we've got, of course we have my own DVDs on diet. And there's a good 2-page printout that you can get for free on my website in the diet area. But basically what we find is that the foods that turn our body in the wrong direction, and this is not just for heart disease, this includes cancer, diabetes, and a whole bunch of other different things, are too much or too many starches, sugars, and alcohols for your body to be able to handle. So alcohols, that's self-explanatory. Sugars, that's self-explanatory, although, of course, the artificial sweeteners are even worse. If you were to use sucralose or acesulfam K or cyclamates or NutraSweet or Equal or Splenda or AminoSweet, those are even worse than sugar because those are made in a laboratory. And your body doesn't know what they are. So those are actually poisons for you. But we just want to bring sweets way down. The healthy sweets are Yacon and Stevia. There's information on my website on that. So we want to bring down starches, sweets, and alcohols. And the starches are mostly the grains. There are two vegetables that are very high starch, and those are corn and potatoes. The less you eat of them, the healthier you will be. But as far as the other starches, they are all the grains. So wheat and rye. And, what do we have? Rice is a very fast converting starch. That's even worse than some of the others. Bring all of those down is a very, very good idea. And anytime you eat an animal food, really the most important thing in order to make the animal food healthy for you, or actually the two most important things, are one, that the animal should have been eating what that animal is supposed to eat. Here we're talking about what we were supposed to eat and what we're supposed to eat, and we go out there and we eat animals that are eating what they're not supposed to eat. For example, corn-fed beef. Well, cattle don't eat corn. They only eat it because that's the only thing we give them, and therefore they will eat it. Cattle are not farmers. They're not consumers. They don't go to the store. And so cattle should be eating grass and weeds, so we want grass-fed beef. We want grass-fed lamb. We want free range from birth to death. We want our chicken and our eggs to be free-range and organic. And eggs are a very, very healthy food. I do not limit the amount of eggs for any of my patients, regardless of where their cholesterol is. As a matter of fact, the yolk is the healthiest part of the egg. So if you were to eat only one part of the egg, you would be much better off for your health eating the yolk only. However, I don't believe in splitting nature's foods apart, and therefore it's always the entire egg. Or if you really want to hurt yourself, you could have, you know, egg white egg beaters, where you're taking something that is totally non-natural. So
throwing all this stuff together, we want to learn how to eat correctly, and there are many good books on that. A couple of my favorite books on eating are The Primal Blueprint by Mark Sisson. These two are not exactly on eating. They're more overall. The Modern Nutritional Diseases and How to Prevent Them by Alice and Fred Ottoboni, PhD. They're both PhDs. And Everlasting Health, which is by Robert Bernardini. And he did a very, very good job in covering health. Very few things in his book that I don't agree with. So that's number one is diet. And everybody's doing the wrong thing. They're going on a low-fat diet, and that screws up cholesterol totally. What you want to be is on a high good-fat, low-bad-fat diet. And then we want to bring down the starches, sugars, and alcohols. We want to have adequate amounts of non-starchy vegetables with butter and coconut oil and all sorts of other things poured all over them, which are good for you. I don't have time to cover all that here. It's on my eating video. And really the most important thing is just to understand. Cholesterol is a good substance that your body manufactures, sort of like firemen, to go out and help the body. And if you stop the firemen, you are not doing a good thing. If you change the body so that it no longer needs as many firemen, if the fire starts getting put out so you don't need as many firemen, that is fine. I have no problem with that. Things have to be done for the right reason. So I realize this is a little bit of a complex audio. I've covered a lot of different things. I'm sure many of you are going to have to listen to this two or three times. And I hope I have been helpful. And there's lots of additional information on my website and on my videos. Thank you for your interest.